Well, sir, you'll be surprised. In my board, I'm the only male. We are five in our board, and I'm the only male. It's just that we decided to come lean and mean because we understand the challenges that beset Intersight right now. So we thought this representation here will be able to speak on behalf of the board as well as Intersight. However, we are expecting one director, who is a female director, who is the up-chair in our recent committee. So I think she must be still on her way.
Okay. I think you are trying to protect me. Next time when you take a decision, you must know there must be two females there. Because the next question will be, do you think it is only men who can represent you properly? So it's okay. Just bear in mind when you come to us, we are going to ask you that question. And I'll be part of those people who ask you questions. You see, next to me is a female. So that you don't have an issue.
Noted, sir.
Thank you very much. Okay. Where is the board of Plaza? You are here. Okay. All right, welcome. I can see you are a bit running ahead of schedule, and I want to commend the fact that you saw it befitting to come earlier. We have been here since 8 o'clock this morning, and we are going to be here up until 10:30 this evening. So we are quite committed group of honorable members, and we go to detail in terms of issues that need to be done. So let's hear from your presentation. Expect some clarity seeking questions after you have presented, but I guess I'm talking to Obaba Umtebuka.
Umtebuka.
Yeah, Umtebuka. Oh, okay. Ubu Umtande. Umtunga wanga giti geno. I've been doing what he did. Okay, over to you, Chair, and your team.
Thank you very much, honorable members. We would like to thank this opportunity. It is the very first time that Intersight gets an opportunity to come and present here. You all know that we are a subsidiary of PRASA that is tasked to look after the properties and to square the assets so that we can generate revenue for the rail agency. Mine is just to give an introduction and then an overview. The presentation is going to be done by my CEO here, Ntandeni Mjungwa. On the other side, we've got our company secretary, Ugeri Mabunda. So like I said, we are really a main team, but we're hoping that we've got all the answers for you. Myself and the board joined Intersight around March 2016. So basically myself and the and two other members, we are in our first term, which has come to an end, around now. We have two other members who've been serving a little longer. So yes, there is a bit of experience, but our management
you know, come all the way. And it's interesting when they will take you through the history that Interfaith used to be quite a force to reckon with. But around 2010, it started taking a dip. And the dip you will see from the presentation is primarily because of lack of dependencies. I'm glad that our shareholder is here with us. So it's good to speak openly. One thing that I can say up front, our shareholder has been very, very supportive in terms of giving us signing off the compact and all the things that we need in terms of our mandate. However, at implementation level, I think that must be clear, it has been a problem. And obviously the implementers are management, and again I must hasten to add that the shareholders have taken action against some of the managers who did not implement what was signed off by the board. Hence, you will see that, and maybe you will have seen in Brussels' presentation, that there's been a change of leadership, so we've got new management, and we're forging ahead with a lot of enthusiasm and hope that things are going to definitely change for the better. But yes, it is important to note that Interfaith is definitely boxing way below its weight because of clear dependencies, and obviously our CEO will go into detail in terms of all of those. Coming here, we are saying that we've got an entity which can do us proud as South Africans, but we all need support. We come here with a problem that we spell out what is actually holding the Interfaith from performing, but also coming with solutions. And I'm saying that with that in mind, we're hoping that we'll get the support. I definitely believe that if we look at other models, which obviously our CEO will go into detail, if Interfaith, I think it's just a question of institutional arrangement. If Interfaith had the full autonomy to implement its mandate, we will all be proud. And our shareholder, Brasa, will be very, very proud of us in terms of the revenue that will be generating. Because even if you look worldwide, the trends are such that the rail agency does not necessarily make money out of commuters, money from the commuters, not at all. It's around the real estate. So that is where I think that for now we can definitely, going forward, we can all make ourselves proud as a new team, a support team going forward, because I'm positive, and that's one of the reasons that I've not thrown my toys out, because I know that, as they say, sometimes the darkest hour is before dawn. There is definitely levers that we can hold on to, which can turn around this entity to contribute. If you just look, for instance, the examples are not far. I know that our predecessors, our management, have gone international to look at best practices. But you don't even have to go far. If you look at companies like the institutional arrangement around AXA, for instance, whilst FAA might be having their own challenges, now you give the properties, the assets to AXA, and look what they're doing. And I'm sure that our CEO will give us more examples. Without belaboring the point and without going into detail, I know these things are debatable, but all I'm saying is that if Interfaith could get the necessary autonomy to be able to access assets, funding, and all of this, because we can't go out to the market and borrow if we do not have assets. We cannot work properly with strategic partners if we every time we have to run to our shareholders and say, please give us this, please give us that. But we will give the actual details of what we really need in terms of support and dependencies. Without wasting much time, I'll give over to my CEO, Mutam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Baba Mangas, Brigadier Nkosem, the board, staff, the Kamato. The board is to be spread on Mr. President and staff. Okay, and also to members of the EPCOS, greetings to everyone. It's an honor actually to be given an opportunity to come and present to you today as Interfaith, and also to our beloved group chair, Umam Goyam Sebengelela, and also to the group board member. So without much further ado, I'm going to take the presentation, and what we've done is that each and every slide is numbered, so that at least in cases and query that you have, it's easier than to say go to slide number X, Y, and Z. And also as we're traveling, we just actually make some minor updates, which we're going to highlight to you as well, just to clarify some of the points that we're making much more. So we hope to say it's not to change the content, but just more to clarify. But it hasn't changed for the essence of what we're talking about. Okay. I can see the Honorable Member looking there, I hope we've not transgressed. Okay, this actually is the outline of our presentation. To say there are mainly three aspects to it. We provide the historical context and strategic overview. We then look at the annual financial statement. Then we put the summary and conclusion the way forward. So basically the bullets indented just mainly talk to the annual financial aspect. Okay, the mandate of Interfaith. So the mandate of Interfaith derived actually from PRASA's mandate. PRASA's got two mandates, what they call the primary mandate, which is transportation of people to and from the Republic, and also the secondary mandate, which actually deals with the exploitation of assets acquired by it. I remember last time actually when we met in this house, the issue of exploitation actually was raised as a point of concern to say, but the word that you're using, exploitation, maybe the sweating of assets, But actually we took it verbatim from the Legal Protection Act, as it was, extends. And also in carrying out our objectives, we have got to pay regard to social objectives of government, economic objectives of government, and transport objectives of government. Particularly around social, this actually might entail the issues of human settlement, housing, other government facilities.
Okay, there's a point of, I don't know point of what, yes, I'm not really sure. No, I was listening very attentively to that because I knew where it would take us to. Yeah, no. There is no updated change or any other thing according to what he's saying. He's just saying they are going to bring more clarity on issues that were there. They have not changed either R or any number. Am I getting you correctly? Yeah. Otherwise, I would have gone back to our previous exercise. Continue to.
Okay, thank you very much. And also to say, for instance, when we're doing whatever we're doing, for instance, one of the cases around the economic, issues of BE, transformation, etc., have got to be taken into account, etc. And also transport objectives, to say, first and foremost, PRASA is a transport provider. So whatever we do is also to enhance the experience of the commuter. Okay, now this is one of the problem segment. Now, with this slide effectively to say, at the top, it's a basic accounting principle to say assets is equal to liabilities or debt plus owner's equity. Right, so the name of the company is called Interfaith Asset Investment. But the conundrum that we face is that currently, Interfaith does not have assets on its balance sheet. That actually creates a major limitation to say what they are able to exploit. Because if, for instance, you need to grow the assets of a company, it's either you inject debt into it or the owner invests into the company. But outside of that, it will become difficult to create sustainable value for the company. Secondly, the issue of capital or investment, to say we've actually fallen short in terms of that regard. We do not actually receive any capital funding or access to borrowing. Again, it actually creates a limitation. Or if you don't have borrowing power,
And historically, there was this issue of blurring or overlapping mandates between Pastor Christ and Interfaith. Hence, also then the group board taking a decision to consolidate the two entities, partly to deal also with this issue of overlapping or blurring of mandates. You know, again, the exercise is still current, but it will, you know, hopefully should be concluded pretty soon. Okay. So, and in terms of the problem statement that you put prior, and then in terms of proposed solution now to say, how do you address some of those issues? You know, we're saying if we've got effective institutional arrangement between DOT Plus and Interfaith, it will go a long way towards addressing some of the, you know, deficiencies in terms of the performance of the entity. Secondly, we have got the secondary mandate of PASA. Again, to say if there's a clearer focus or exclusivity around it, you know, it then has to give us a clearer focus to say, Interfaith, yes, there is your role to play, do what is required. The issue of consolidation of PASA Christ and Interfaith into a single entity is also an important issue, which actually the group board has initiated. You know, now that assists in terms of, say, overlapping of mandates, but also improving efficiencies internally to say you can't have two entities actually focus on property, so it needs to be clearer within the group. Otherwise, you engender internal competition, which actually may not be sustainable in the long run.
And if I can just augment that, that is as a result of our shareholder listening to us, so hence they came with the consolidation.
And also the issue of transfer of assets or certain rights from PASA to Interfaith. Now on point four, for instance, I mean further down we're just going to also elaborate to say if you look at Telkom and Gyro, the assets were transferred by Telkom to Gyro to then enable that entity to explore those assets, you know, and again give it a clearer focus, you know, so again, you know, talking along those lines. Five, the issue of capital allocation. To say currently we do not get access to funding within the PASA group. On top of that, we can't borrow or go outside and borrow. Now, this is major limitation in terms of value creation. You know, no company can create value unless you can either borrow or you get injection of capital from your shareholder. And also, we're talking about issues of certain, not just across the board, but certain exemptions from the PFMA. For instance, your Section 54, which then actually improves your ease of doing business. And finally, you know, to enable and to solve some of the problems is the use of strategic partnerships, whereby we crowd in the private sector investors to come in and co-invest within our environment to then create value for all. By having private sector investors, we then also sharing the risk from the downside, but also on the reward side as well, and drawing from the expertise. So the proposed solution to issues of funding, basically we've got three main sources of funding. It's either it's capital allocation, it's equity funding, or it's debt, or it's a combination of these to then actually enable, you know, an entity. Okay. So those instruments, for instance, will be readily available to other entities, but in our case, we actually have been limited because of that. Okay. We don't briefly draw on global benchmarks. So we've looked at local companies, but also overseas. If, for instance, you look at the table on top, we're looking at non-fair or non-core revenue contributors to a group, you know, be it in Germany, in Deutsche Bahn, or in Japan, the Japanese rail, etc. If you look at number one in Germany, the Deutsche Bahn example, they are a railway operator. However, the property portfolio contributes about 33% of their operating income. You know, that's actually a significant number, you know, coming from the property sector. You look at the Japanese rate, again, their property contributes about 39%. You know, so you also look at Hong Kong, we've got MTR, they're quite a major player also in this regard, you know, they contribute about 49%. So we're saying if you just look globally right around the world, the best practice to say give focus to property, then we're able to actually to unlock the value, then the property can contribute towards actually the primary mandate. If you look closer to home, I mean, if you look at the point that our chairman was making earlier on, you look at AXA, I think their contribution, the last time we should have calculated, was about 45%. Property or non-aeronautical business to the core. You know, and one of the issues is that AXA actually, the founding CEO of AXA came from Interfaith. And Interfaith for us is much more younger than Interfaith, but it by far actually, you know, has outgrown Interfaith. You also look at Telkom. I made that example earlier on. To say about 2 years ago, they restructured their business to then put the property portfolio in an entity called Gyro. Again, the expectation being to say, you can actually export those assets to actually then realize savings. Right? I also then just briefly touch also on other non-core assets which are being exploited. You look at your India, they've got Railtel, which plays in the telecoms ICT space, you know, with access to 45,000 kilometers. So they lease their fiber to network operators, but also they provide services in the ICT space. I then also make other examples, you know, in that regard. Okay, the next one. Okay, I briefly touch on this issue of Gyro. Gyro is a subsidiary of Telkom. You know, so their relationship to Telkom should be similar to ours and Prasa's. You know, they are wholly owned by Telkom. And Telkom actually moved assets from its balance sheet into the balance sheet of Gyro. You know, those assets include properties plus also some towers, you know, for them to commercially exploit and also give focus to that. You know, so effectively I'm saying there is a model which has been tested by other entities to exploit that value, you know, and actually then be able to contribute to the core business. Okay. Okay, and also maybe just in passing, you know, to say, in the establishment of AXA, you know, the initial CEO of AXA actually came from Interfaith. In the establishment of Joburg Fresh Produce Market, you know, Interfaith played a role in the establishment. In the establishment of the Joburg Property Company, Interfaith also played a role there in that regard. Also, when Sandal corporatized and they needed management of its property portfolio, we actually assisted Sandal in that regard. You know, now also we just highlight to say, with a portfolio of only about 8 airports, you know, AXA's performance, you know, right across the board, far exceeds ours. You know, to say again, there are lessons to be drawn from other SOEs to say, what can we learn from this in order for us to be more effective in contributing to the group and also then lessening the burden on the central fiscal. Okay, next one. Okay, we're just highlighting actually our key performance areas or focus areas is Interfaith. Effectively, there are about four areas: is real estate, is ICT telecom, is advertising, and renewable energy. Okay, so those are actually our main focus areas that we're focused on as Interfaith, as per our science shareholder complex. Okay, we just wanted also to say there was a question asked last time we came to PICOS to say, what are you doing doing housing or retail development around stations? You know, to say, if for instance you look at a station and the number of stations in a particular line, you know, it creates a corridor which is linked by a railway line. Now, how do you develop a corridor? You know, so you've got a development framework that's what we're using. Okay, sorry. No, you don't have the slide. This was the clarification point that I spoke to earlier on, Mr. Sheikh.
What are you clarifying on the
Duan? Okay. I can actually skip and go straight to the point. But what we try to highlight is that when we do development around stations or around our alongside our corridors.
Honorable Lady.
Okay. Make our work easier.
Okay.
Don't give us clarity.
Okay.
Stay on the document. That's what you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
But thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll do exactly that.
Yeah. Okay. I think if you have this one. Okay. This basically is within the context to say when we develop, do developments alongside our railway line, you know, essentially to improve ultimately the community experience, to say if people need to do whatever services, you know, you want to shop or you want to go to Home Affairs or SAFA, at least that is accessible within the station environment.
And secondly, by developing this asset closer to the station, we also then contribute towards improving our financial situation as well. So as Intersight, we've got an option, but which actually have not exercised, to either co-invest or not. So the land belongs to Prasa. There's a rental paid. In addition to that, there's an option whereby we can co-invest in some of these developments. For instance, this development was about 330 million rand when it was actually launched, and we had an option, but however, we could not exercise that option. Now, what I'm saying is to say, by having an opportunity to co-invest, it also assists in alleviating our situation to become self-sustainable as an entity. Okay, this basically is just an explanation around the slide before, to say, if you look at the bottom of the trailer there, it's called Wamnyando Mall, it's in KZN, Umlazi Township. We created about 22,000 square meters of gross lettable area, and the cost at the time was 130 million rand. So we lost an opportunity to co-invest in this development because we did not have actually access to capital. Langa Station, I think, also to have this one. Let's go. Okay, it's also here in the Western Cape, this one. You know, it's a smaller development, 4,500 square meters. It costs 55. Again, to say it's around the issue of development around our station to create convenience for the commuter. To say your shops are closer to you, you are coming from work, you can buy stuff before you go home. But also, when we co-invest, it then also gives us revenue. And we become more sustainable as opposed to being dependent, you know, on allocations from treasury, etc., or from our parent company. Okay. Umgen, I think this one is there. Oh, okay. It's a 1.5 billion rand development in KwaZulu-Natal. It's a light industrial development. We also have an opportunity here to co-invest up to 50%, you know. So the key issue here is that if we don't invest, we actually lose out on the upside. The only benefit that we derive as Prasa is merely from the rental of land. So they lease land from us, we get those rentals, that's about it. So there's no additional benefit accruing to us as an entity. Okay.
Okay. Honourable members, let's allow the presentation to continue unhindered. Thank you.
Okay. Umlazi, I think also this one is still there. This actually is an upcoming development which actually we'll be discussing with the city of Durban and also with the developer, with a view to say again, it's a terminal station at Umlazi, whereby again to say we need to create a facility whereby our commuters, you know, linked to the station itself, can then also have access to facilities. As you go to work, you can actually do your shopping, do whatever is required. Okay. So it's an opportunity in the near future, but actually it's being discussed as we speak. Somebody, I think also you have this one, at Guamashu, you know, again, it's another development happening at Guamashu's A section, you know, whereby there's a vacant piece of land owned by Prasa, and a vacant piece of land owned by the municipality. We then combine these two land parcels. There's a private developer coming in. We've got an opportunity to co-invest, to say again in the same spirit, to say in that corridor, Guamashu, Durban, Umlazi. We then actually create value for our commuters in the sense that facilities are closer to them. We can also bring government services, you know, through your SASA, through your SARS, etc., or Home Affairs, closer to the people. But in addition to that, our ticketing facilities are also upgraded as part of this. It then actually improves the commuter experience in that regard. As opposed to actually having a transit station, at least people can actually go there to meet, you know, to have meetings, and also to do their business or shopping, whatever needs to be done. Okay. Okay, this one also, I think it was there, Goodwood, here in the Western Cape. There was a sword turning ceremony. I think it was about a year ago, if I'm not mistaken, whereby the minister, the former minister of human settlements, Noma India, actually did the sword turning. Again, it's next to a station, whereby we are now bringing housing closer to the station. And it creates a convenience for our people in the sense that if people don't have to spend too much money on transportation, it actually creates actual convenience factor for them. You know, as opposed to driving or taking a taxi from home to the station, then from the station to your place of work, you are much more closer to the station, then you don't have to pay additional cost except for the train service. You know, so this is our contribution as Interfaith towards supporting the use of public transport and the primary mandate of passing. Okay, you can continue. Okay, we've spoken to this one as well. You can continue. I think Kesan also we did have in the presentation. Okay. So there's also an opportunity that we develop Kesan Station. To say for a long time actually we've not actually seen major investment coming to Kesan Station. So there's an opportunity to develop the station to also become a hub where, for instance, we've got office space, we've got a hotel, we've got shops as well, which creates a convenience for our commuters. You know, so again, from a property point of view, we're actually looking at developing this asset to the tune of about 1.2 billion rand in conjunction with the private sector. You know, again, we've got an opportunity to co-invest in that asset, you know, and in that way, we also enhance the commuter experience. Okay, these are just basically artist impressions, so we can skip through that again. Okay, the write-up, I think, actually was also there before. To say it's an opportunity to co-invest for Interfaith in development of this asset, you know, which again is going to be to the benefit of the commuters. Okay, I will skip the slide because actually, you know, it was not there before. This one was there. To say, I mean, besides the asset which is property, Prata also has got fiber. You know, fiber right now actually is in high demand. You know, it's utilized by your mobile operators, by other players, you know, bringing, you know, videos and other Wi-Fi, etc. to the home, you know. So again, as Prasa owns this asset, it also gives us an opportunity to exploit it, you know. By way of example, for instance, we did mention the issue of other entities across the world which have got access to this asset, you know, and again, you can derive revenue out of that. Okay. Okay. This slide also was, I think, was there before. So effectively, on the back of the fiber that we have, you know, we can also start providing Wi-Fi services to our commuters. I mean, we're already providing that to some in some of our stations, you know, free of charge to the commuters. Again, it's a convenience factor to say if these people are able to be more productive when they're at the station as opposed to when they're not, you know, by merely having access to Wi-Fi free of charge. You know, again, we're able to deliver this in partnership with private sector partners. Okay, you can skip this one. Okay. I'm just skipping those there, Mr. Chair, which...
No, let me request you, I'm not derailing you. we have some logistical arrangements. We're supposed to see you in Parliament. Now we took advantage of the fact that we had some time to talk to you. Now it is that time where the capitalist really thinks about money, not Ubuntu. And they tell us, hey, should you go beyond 5 o'clock, you'll pay us. And the office of the Auditor General will say that is fruitless expenditure because it is not follow the competitive bidding process. You know that they are here with us. So I suggest that we stop here, you just note, and go over to the other venue, then continue. That's my request. We'll eat when we go there, and I must warn you, as we get tired, we also accommodate less. So when we are there, we are not going to eat with you, as we have done this morning. I'm told it's not me. In my home, I eat with people all the time. Now this is somebody's home, and I have to listen. I'm just saying, as we break here, we'll allow some space for dinner and we'll meet at 6, so that you can get something to nibble, and then we meet where we are supposed to meet at 6. Sorry for interjecting when you were presenting. I hope you find it in your heart to forgive me.
No, it's in order, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let me leave the other side. Honorable members, you know the arrangement, the three. Let's go to the to Parliament. Thank you. There are no just in Aqua. What is the 514? Just follow MACD. You know it, MACD. So the owners of the building say thanks to those who have accommodated us here.
How are we going?